You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa. Today we are in Luintra.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Fran Reyes.
Hello, Richard. Hello, listeners.
Hello, Fran. It doesn't feel like Spain.
No, this is Galicia. This is, you know, we can pair this up with the Brittany and at some moments also with Great Britain.
Well, that makes sense because Lionel spent the first 9 days of Vuelta complaining about the heat. He was, I think, melting most days. Certainly not melting here. 16 degrees today, overcast. There was some rain. There was some rain at the finish. It's very un-Spanish and certainly very welcome. I'm enjoying it. It's very refreshing.
Exactly. For you, this is local, normal weather, you know. And for me, it's quite hostile, you know. I am afraid that I'm not going to use my shorts any time from here to the end of the Vuelta. But still, you know, it's pretty nice to be in Galicia, where everything is green, you know. Did you take a look at the gift they gave us today in the press room?
I didn't get one.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
No, what was it?
Well, we got, we the lucky ones, the popular people in the press room, we got a small figure of a sharpener, because apparently this section, this part of Orense is big on sharpening, you know? This is,
pencil sharpening.
No, not pencil. We are speaking about knife, you know? But yeah, and
So you got a knife sharpener?
Yeah, no. I have the figure of a sharpener,
But
not anything I can sharpen with. But you know, it is so beautiful. It is so decorative that we are going to put it in our car
as a kind of lucky mascot. Well, I must go in and try and get one if it's free. Listen, today was really action packed. It was a lumpy stage, not a mountainous stage, almost like an Ardennes classic, or perhaps a bit of a rehearsal for the World Championship road race coming up in Innsbruck. Because the first guy who attacked today was Vincenzo Nibali, who we've not seen a lot of in this race, wears number one on his back, but he seemed to be a man on a mission today, and he attacked several times, perhaps also because there was some bad news that came out of his team. Bahrain Merida at the start this morning, Konstantin Siutsu, veteran rider who has been around, ridden for lots of teams, HC Highroad, Team Sky, Dimension Data, has ridden for Bahrain Merida this year, out of contract, and he's tested positive for EPO, out of competition test on the 31st of July. I was interested to look, that was just after he'd ridden the Tour of Austria, and before he rode to San Sebastian, he started to San Sebastian but didn't finish. So pretty shocking news, an EPO positive. We don't get many of those, but that would be career ending for Siutsu if the B sample confirms the A sample.
Even if he hadn't tested positive, it was probably the last year in Siutsu's career. Back in, I don't remember if in June or July, Brent Copeland already announced in Tutto Bici, Italian website, former magazine, that Siutsu was one of the men leaving the team. So it probably came down to a situation after a 17-year-long career as a professional cyclist. It probably came down to a situation where there was nothing to lose. So he played his chances, you know, trying to find one latest pro contract. But well, it's a shame that he ends up his career like that.
So Nibali riding away from the storm of the Siutsu positive as we rolled this morning out of Mombui.
Yeah, one of the small villages that we visited as well.
A tiny place. On the course, 207.8 kilometres today, four categorised climbs, but that didn't really tell you an awful lot about just how hard today was. It was up and down all day long, very tough indeed, but very, very fast. I think 96 kilometres covered in the first 2 hours, and we were very early to finish. They were 40 minutes up on schedule by the end. Lots of attacking. One guy that suffered in all that attacking was Superman Lopez, the Astana leader, one of the big favourites here. He went off the back in a group, 130 down at one point. We'll hear what happened to him a little bit later on. But Nibali was still having a go at the front. Michał Kwiatkowski was also very aggressive, and that was getting the race more excited than Nibali's attacks. Nibali's well done overall. Kwiatkowski is still a threat up there. So he was really up for it today. A break did go away eventually. It included people like Brent Bookwalter, Rafael Majka, Rudy Mollard, the former red jersey wearer, winner Anacona from Movistar, Pierre Roland, Theo Gegenhardt, Malcolm Mollema, who's obviously hunting stages. Mahawi Kudus was there as well. On it went. Nasser Buhani packed, stage winner here at the Vuelta, Cofidis rider, he packed. Another break went clear after that first one was caught. It included Alessandro De Marchi, Nicholas Roach and Dylan Towns, all from BMC. Most dangerously included Thibaut Pinot from Groupama FDJ, a real threat overall. Franco Pellizzotti was there, Omar Fraile was there, Rafael Majka was there again, Tesh Benoot, Jack Haig was there from Michelin Scott. Now, interestingly, he'd been in the Superman Lopez group, so he'd been off the back into the bunch, and he was now in this move, as was winner Anacona once again. Pierre Roland was there again, Jonathan Restrepo from Katusha Alpecin was there, Sergio Henao was there for Team Sky, Mollema was there again. He's trying really hard to win a stage in this Vuelta. The group went away, got a big lead, went up to four and a half minutes. Pino was the virtual red jersey at this point, and it was Movistar that were chasing Michelin Scott team of Simon Yates, who is leading the race, of course. Didn't have to chase because they had Jack Haig up the road, and Jack Haig was only about 4:28 down, so he also was an outside threat for overall. So Movistar took up the chase. They weren't too happy, or Alejandro Valverde wasn't too happy at that at the finish, and had some angry words from Mitchelton Scott. But it was, an interesting scenario unfolding. Lots and lots of attacks from that front group. It really started to fall apart. Malcolm Mollema was away on his own for a little bit. Pino was the problem, because with the chase behind, the riders in the break, most of them weren't happy that Pino was with them because they were concerned about being caught. In the end, that didn't happen. It was a survivor from the breakaway, Alessandro De Marchi, who got away initially with his teammate Roach and also Restrepo, the Katusha rider. Roach sat up, went back. Restrepo eventually was dropped, and De Marchi rode to the finish alone to win the stage.
From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. They host regular rides every day of the week from more than 20 clubhouses around the world. Over the next few weeks, these include the Cross Prestige Manchester, a 100-kilometre mixed terrain adventure around the best of the Northwest roads and single track, a Vuelta tribute ride from the New York hub, and a cyclocross skills clinic in Boulder, Colorado. Visit rafa.cc to find your local ride. And we'll maybe give you some more details of some of these rides as the Vuelta unfolds over the next 10 days or so. But Fran, a really enthralling stage today. Couldn't take my eyes off the TV.
Yeah, I was still thinking of the Rafa Cycling Club, I wish I could go on a ride rather than all my morning runs that end up disappointing me because my legs don't get better as the Vuelta goes by, Anyway... the stage today was thrilling. There were a lot of things to see, a lot of night details to catch. I was particularly surprised with how good Mitchelton Scott played their cards, because getting Jack Haig there was
a masterstroke, absolutely. And Pino, I mean, he's not perhaps in the same form that he was in for most of the Giro until he collapsed at the end, but he had a go today. He said at the finish that he's not a calculating rider today. It did cost some effort and energy, but he doesn't regret that because he wanted to have a go. He'll have a go on other days. In the end, he was one of the few guys from the breakaway who did manage to stay clear, but all that effort was worth only about 20 seconds in the end.
Yeah, but one can't help but feel for him, because the moment where the breakaway began to disintegrate was because everyone was basically looking at him, waiting for him to do the best part of the job, because of course he was the main GC threat. He tried to go on a duo breakaway with Dylan Towns at about 60 kilometers to go, but they didn't cooperate quite well, and the group of course organized to chase him. And afterwards, it was a matter of breaking away from him as he was trying to make the most out of the breakaway GC-wise. So great use of effort. One, we have to give a lot of value as spectators because it was entertaining and it did lead up the race for the best part of it.
Well, you spoke to Nicholas Roach at the finish, who was, I mean, BMC had played it well as well today. They had numbers in that move and ended up winning the stage. Nicholas Roach, who today was announced to move as a mover, he is joining Team Sunweb, where he'll be an important teammate for Tom Dumoulin next year. But you spoke to him at the finish, Fran. Here is Nicholas Roach.
Followed the good move earlier on with François Desjardins. Thank you. And I really gave us a hard time behind, but I was able that we were able to control. And then when the race went again a second time on that cat, maybe 60k to go, then it was good to have myself and Dema up the front. I was really struggling there. When Dylan came back, I was like, all right, we're three with 11 or 12 riders. This could help us towards the finish. When the Katusha rider attacked, Dema said, go. And, I think he meant that he knew I was a bit weaker than him today and I would be a good ally halfway up the climb. I have to say the Katusha rider was pretty strong and I was stuck to the wheel. Just as I started to pass, I hear on the radio Dema saying I'm 5 seconds behind, so I waited for him, gave him a little push, and I could just see he wanted to go more. And I said, Dema, just because I think he wanted me to be with the two of us as long as possible. But I just felt I had already given a lot, and I just said, Dema, just go. I need to take my pace now. And then I kind of just stayed with the guys, and I think Dylan and myself, we did a really good job controlling in the back, and Dema finished off nicely.
So that was Nicholas Roach, who was one of the key figures today. Another one was Jonathan Restrepo, a young Colombian. He's still only 23. And he, I remember, 2 years ago, was up the road on the stage that finished at La Camperona, where we go on Friday, don't we? We finish there on Friday.
Well, to be honest, you have a better memory than me, because I don't remember if he was at the breakaway that day. But
was, and his teammate won the stage.
Samuel Spilak. No. Not Spilak.
Lagutin.
Sergei Lagutin, yeah.
He won the stage. Now, Restrepo, I'd never heard of him at the time, and I was told, although he's a Colombian, he's not a climber. He's more of a sprinter, kind of roadman sprinter and ruler. But I was speaking to a member of Katusha's staff at the finish who said Restrepo, unfortunately, after 3 years at Katusha, is out of contract end of the year. Apparently he's lazy, is the verdict from Katusha. So that's why he was up the road today. Obviously getting full support from his team, but his relationship with Katusha is about to come to an end. But you spoke to him, Fran.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Restrepo, what I gather from him is that he's a guy with a lot of potential, because he has a lot of power on his legs. I remember his debut year with Katusha, that he was up there in the Tour Down Under, which is not really easy to be competitive in your first World Tour race. And also that month of February, his first February with the team, was pretty amazing. But afterwards, he hasn't quite managed. He moved for a while to Granada. He was based there training. And afterwards, I gather that he moved to Andorra. But in any case, he's not had development that was expected from Katusha and from any observer. I reckon that he could have a bright future ahead of him if he manages to stay in the World Tour.
Still very young. It seems very harsh to write him off at 23. So he's one of those guys who could be picked up by somebody and really develop, because he's clearly very strong. Nicholas Roach said that. Let's hear what he had to say at the finish, shall we?
Quite a nice performance from you today on the breakaway. How happy you are?
Yeah, I am happy. The break was in high level. I am happy with my shape. I tried to do them my maximum, but the marquee was the best in me. What better than me?
How difficult was it to make into the break? Because we saw that the speed was crazy for the first 2 hours.
It was really, really crazy. I flat tired in the first hour, in the first part of the race, and then I was spending a lot of energy for comeback in the group of Lopez. And then when I come back, I was directly to the break. Whole day full. Whole day.
And which was the moment on which Demarchi did surrender you? In which moment did he break you?
I attacked first in the last climb, and Nico Laroche followed me, and then was Demarchi on me. And then we are together in the last climb, and we speak full gas for the last climb and 2 5Ks to go, and then we see. But he attacked and I have a little bit cramps. But not possible follow him, but was good.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Beta Fuel, the new superfuel from Science in Sport, is a 2-to-1 maltodextrin to fructose isotonic drink that delivers 80 grams of carbohydrates per serving without upsetting your stomach. This formulation means your stomach can process more carbohydrates per hour than glucose alone would allow. And this could make all the difference to your ride, whether you're cresting the Alpe d'Huez or just crossing the line at your local sportive. Available on scienceinsport.com from July the 12th.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products. SISCP25 is the code to use at scienceandsport.com. I've been joined by Daniel Freeb. Hello, Daniel.
Hello.
Had a few problems today, Daniel? Difficult day?
I had problems even before today, because yesterday I made a mistake in the podcast. Very rare
you
mistake.
Did. Yeah. Unusual. Unusual, that. Nobody picked up on it.
Luintra, where we are now, was in Castilla y León, and in fact it's in Galicia.
So we're having some Galician wine.
Correct, some Galician white, excellent white wine.
Love it. You're a Superman Lopez sort of a day, because he had a difficult day, and Fran was going to tell us what happened, but forgot to get him to do that in the last part of the episode. Fran's going to rejoin me for part three. It's all very confusing, but let's just tell you briefly what did happen to Miguel Angel Lopez, to use his incorrect name. He collided with someone on the descent, and his derailleur got deviated, is the message I've got from Fran. Something happened to his derailleur. He had to stop, and it took a while for his team to realise what he was going through. Teammates told Fran that they had to pull full gas 50 kilometres. Lopez said on Spanish TV that he was confident they would bridge back to the group. My team is strong enough to do a 150-kilometre team time trial in the mountains if necessary, he said. And he did get back on. A minute and a half down he was at one point. And we were saying last night, what a strong team he has. And today was, there was an interesting subtext today's stage with the teams, and Mitchelton Scott in the leader's jersey with Sam Yates were not the team chasing down that dangerous break with Thibaut Pinot, because they had Jack Haig there. It was Movistar, but Movistar weren't very happy at that at the finish, were they, Daniel?
Well, they weren't too happy, but two schools of thought. One, that Mitchelton Scott played a very good game of poker, and it was a case of who was going to blink first between them and Movistar, who was going to do the bulk of the pulling to bring back Pinot. That's what it looked like to us anyway. However, Rich, what we didn't see were the first 100 kilometres of racing, when Mitchelton Scott apparently controlled the race to a large extent. And this was something that Simon Yates pointed out when it was put to him, that Mitchelton, well, pretty much left all the work to Movistar in the last 100 kilometres.
It also came down to the fact that Jack Haig up the road, who was reasonably well placed overall. You know, if that group, which did have 4.5 minutes at one point, they were in a good position there.
Although, I spoke to Michal Kwiatkowski at the finish, and he suggested that Mitchelton Scott, that the remnants of Mitchelton Scott and behind were not at sixes and sevens, but not looking too convincing. And Kwiatkowski certainly thought that Mitchelton Scott had gambled today and got away with it.
Well, therein lies perhaps the truth here, doesn't it? Because Valverde at the finish was very angry about Mitchelton Scott leaving it to them to chase, and he said that Mitchelton Scott never chase. They never take responsibility. And I don't think that's very fair. I
mean, they're a gegenpressing team. Yeah, this is football terminology.
Oh, God.
This is they play well. They're a team that's in loosely footballing parlance, they sit back and they counter attack. They're not a possession team. We've said this before. They're not a team that's going to have 70% possession of the bike race. They're going to have 20% possession, and then they counter attack.
They had 70%, 80% possession at the Giro, and I think that
of the jersey. But I'm talking the about way, the how much you see them on the front of the peloton.
I think at the Giro they rode at the front a lot. I mean, they had, as Jack Hay told us last night, they had a different team there, a strong...
They're not Sky, they're not tiki-taka like Sky.
I remember Chris Juliansen sitting on the front for mile upon mile or kilometre upon kilometre at the Giro. And I think they were...
The peloton or the team bus?
They were very present at the front of the race when Simon Yates had the... And I think that too is leading to perhaps a bit more of a cautious approach here. Movistar... You know, they've got riders second and third overall. It's as much up to them, perhaps, especially when in the scenario that we had today. I spoke to Jack Hague at the finish. Let's hear from him, because we spoke to him last night, but I had to speak to him again tonight after being in the break. So I used another Jack Hague credit tonight. Here he is at the finish. I guess that was sort of mission accomplished today. You put Movistar under a lot of pressure. Was that the sort of plan?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of mission accomplished in a roundabout way. It was an incredibly hard day, and everyone put a lot of pressure under us, to be honest, and Movistar. But I think in the end, it ended up working out well with myself in the break, and I was just trying to cancel out Micah and Pinot until the very end there, where Simon was just on his own in the peloton, and I came back just in case he had any problems, like flat tire or anything. But no, good.
It looked a pretty crazy day right from the start. We saw Nibali attacking right from the start. And did that really set the pattern?
Yeah, it was a really fast, hard day. And to be honest, I can't really say too much about what happened at the start there. On one of the downhill sections, it was really bumpy. I had a mechanical and had to swap bikes and ended up in the group with Lopez. And then I didn't really come back for quite some time.
So you saw the race from all different sides today.
I did. I was dropped in the peloton, then off the front, and then dropped back to the peloton.
So it was Jack Hague. So, I mean, is it in the end a case of much ado about nothing today? It was thrilling to watch. It was very exciting. But in the end, not an awful lot has changed, apart from a lot of riders will have tired legs. And there's a little bit of simmering animosity, resentment between the two most powerful teams in the race, or the two teams in the best position in the race.
Bit of a local rivalry as well, Rich, in the sense that, we talked about Neil Stevens last night and the Basque connection at Mitchelton Scott. There's still quite a large Basque contingent at Mitchelton Scott, certainly among the backroom staff. And Movistar is a team that's based in Navarra, but it's the neighbouring region of the Basque country. So, you know, a bit of a local derby, a bit of a ding-dong.
They're Aussies, mate. They're Aussies. Are they not?
Wow. Anyway, you mentioned Jack Hague. This is something that's been eating me for a while, for the last week or so. I'd like someone to plot a graph of the performances of ginger-haired riders at this Vuelta.
Someone's doing
relative
that.
Relative to the temperatures, because they're doing very well. They're doing very well at the moment, aren't they? The Kreuzweg,
there is a ginger classification that I've been watching. Yeah, Ian Boswell as well is in that. I've seen it on Twitter.
Have we ever asked the question before? Has a ginger rider ever won a major tour?
Jan Ullrich.
Oh well, yeah, of course.
I mean, you should know that. Of all people,
the only one.
Quite freckly, Jan Ullrich. Any other redheads? Oof, God, you got me there.
Of course, before about 1968, all riders were black and white.
Jan Raas was a redhead, wasn't he? He never won a Grand Tour, did he?
But yeah, pre 1970s, every rider was in black and white, so we don't know. They didn't have hair colours.
It's a great mystery.
Yeah.
Wow, Stephen Kreuzweg, of course, should be in that classification as well. He went close a couple of years ago. Difficult. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Daniel, before we say cheerio to you, let's just hear briefly from IQ Vispeek and Wilco Kelderman, Team Sunweb. Kelderman said he had a good day today. Let's hear first from him and then from Vispeek, who talks a little bit about the new signings confirmed today. Robert Power and Nicholas Roach are both joining Sunweb. Actually, before we do hear, a little rumour I heard today, Daniel, possible transfer, Larry Warbass, AG2R.
Yeah, could happen. On the Roach thing, Rich, there was some beef about that. There was some beef about that yesterday because Nicholas Roach was apparently confronted by a Dutch TV crew, I think, yesterday. In fact, the interviewer was Mark Demar, former Rabobank professional. And he asked Nicholas...
Tour of Britain winner, no?
was he? And he asked Nicholas Roach about the Sunweb rumours in such a way to suggest to Nicholas Roach that Sunweb had already put out a press release and it was all official. And I think Nicholas Roach went on to speak about, you know, how excited he was about the move, only to get back to the team bus in the evening and to have an email from the Sunweb management about the press release, the actual press release that was going to come out today and announce his signature. So he jumped the gun, rather, and I think it caused a bit of consternation.
Ouch. Joe Dombrowski, another one rumoured to possibly be going to Sunweb. I must ask him whether that's true or not. But anyway, we got a bit derailed there. Here's Wilco Kelderman first, and then Aki Vespeek. Well, you finished 40 minutes ahead of schedule there. It looked like a crazy stage, was that?
Yeah, I think they went after 100k or something, and yeah, it was a crazy stage. Also, the roads were bumpy and left, right, up and down, so it was never really, really easy. But for me, it was a really good day. I felt really good today, and yeah, it was a nice stage.
The team, you know, is Nicholas Roach today as a new signing. Quite a few new people come in. Is the main aim to strengthen the team around Tom Dumoulin for the races next year?
Yeah. I think with these two additions, we get some experienced rider in the team with Nicholas, and that's an advantage. Also, a solid rider, always on high level, good in team time trials, good climber, did himself some good UC results, and that is what you need. And then we have a very promising rider with Robert Power, where we hope and think that we can make the next steps with. I mean, he showed in under 23s he was among the best in the mountains, and yeah, we think and we hope that we can take out that talent.
Has that been something, watching the Giro and the Tour, when Tom's maybe been a bit isolated and other riders, other leaders have maybe had one or two teammates around them, is that something you've been very keen to address and rectify for next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is also a bit unfortunate that Wilco of course breaks his collarbone 5 days before the Tour de France. Yeah, I mean, if he's there, then maybe nobody talks about it. But yeah, that happens, and we had to split our GC support riders over the Giro and the Tour, and then it was maybe a bit too thin, including with the collarbone fracture of Wilco. But if we gather the troops all around the Tour de France this year and don't go for two Grand Tours, then I think we can field a very strong team. But also, it's not only about the strength, it's also about experience, and that's something we learned the last couple of years. I think that last week in a Grand Tour, especially with, you know, when you're fighting for a top three position, you need experienced riders that recognize certain situations and keep the overview. And I think with Nicholas Roach, we have a rider like that.
And we spoke to Wilco earlier. He seemed to have a good day today on a very tough stage, but he seemed to be feeling good and happy with how he was performing. I mean, he lost that little bit of time, but how do you look at his prospects here? You know, podium, the win, is everything to play for as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to say because it's the first Grand Tour this year, and that's maybe also his advantage, that he is a bit fresher. And I think that is what you see here today in this stage. Yeah, we have to see. I mean, we come from behind, that we don't have it totally in our own hands. We're also depending now a little bit with these gaps that other GC riders have bad moments, and then we also need to see them and take advantage of it. And Wilco needs to have a solid level. I mean, he for sure cannot afford a bad day anymore, because then he's out of the GC.
Don't forget to listen to our morning show, Kilometer Zero, supported by The Economist, Monday, Wednesday and Friday mornings throughout the Vuelta a España.
Little reminder there that we are releasing episodes of Kilometer Zero Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. So today's was a look back at the Movistar team from its origins in 1980 as Reynolds, a Spanish dynasty it's called. And we're on Wednesday, aren't we, today? So Friday will be something else. We're working on it at the moment. I'll reveal what that is tomorrow night's episode.
Yeah, hold it. We are going to surprise everyone.
Yes, we are. They're sponsored. The Kilometer Zero episodes are sponsored by The Economist. Thanks very much to them. And we should say that the artwork for these episodes is done by Grand Tour Art, and they've been illustrating each of our episodes of Kilometer Zero with some lovely illustrations. The Movistar one featured a painting of Nairo Quintana, and they're selling these on eBay to raise money for the Dave Rayner Fund. So do have a look, and if you fancy bidding for one of their pictures, go to eBay and have a look for them. Very good cause, of course, helping young riders. Now, Fran, at the we were standing up at the finish, a few dollops of rain starting to land on us. Down the mountain or down the hill, it was torrential rain the riders came through. But one of the teams that were particularly active and standing out in the gloom in their bright pink and green were Education First, EF Education First.
Yeah, it was quite extraordinary to see the kind of attack they did, because, you know, normally when we see four riders of a team going to the head of the bunch, it would be to keep a steady pace, maybe explosive, but not to attack full on as they did. It was a good move because it caught everyone by surprise, but in the end I'm not sure it had a desired effect, other than a statement of power didn't bring a lot home for EF Education First.
I wasn't really sure what they were doing, and it saw Michael Woods go off the front briefly on his own. I spoke to him at the finish and found out what it was all about.
We knew it would be difficult. We talked about this in the team meeting, but it was even harder to think than a lot of people, including myself, expected. The first 2 hours was savage. I think we averaged 48k an hour with two categorized climbs. It was insane.
What do you put that down to? I know Nibali was one of the first attackers, almost like he was using this as a rehearsal for the World Championships, we thought. But did that set the pattern for the rest of the race?
I think Nibali, but I actually think the biggest instigator was Kwiatkowski. His attacks just meant that everyone had to follow. You know, he's such a danger man. And then with Pino getting up the road as well, it just meant that the pace had to continue despite the break being established.
How did that move get away with such dangerous riders in it? Do you know?
Everyone was just tired. You could feel this complacency coming over the field. Everyone was just like, why are we still doing this? And then that's when the group went.
And then Movistar obviously began to chase, but held the gap pretty steady. Was it a little bit more controlled at that point once the break had gone?
Yeah, it was more controlled, but they had to ride such a hard tempo that, and the fact that the roads were so twisty and undulating, it meant that it was just still really grippy.
Controlled is a terrible euphemism,
yeah,
isn't it?
I had a bit of a misnomer for controlled, for sure. Yeah.
And then you had to go yourself on the climb. I mean, the team seemed to do quite a job leading into the finish there. What was the thinking there?
Yeah, Simon did an amazing job in leading us into that climb. Simon's just an incredible road captain, and he took that role on today for us. The plan was for me to attack with Riggle on my wheel, but he just, I guess, missed the wheel a bit, and I tried to give him as much of a springboard as possible, but then I had a gap, and I wasn't going for the stage win at that point just because so many riders were up the road, but wanted to try and be a bit of a foil for Riggo for as long as possible. And even though the gap opened up, there were only about, I think, 12 riders by the time we crested that climb, so I'm happy with the move just because Riggo's now sitting in a better position.
And how are you feeling after your crash and stuff? Are you getting over your injuries?
Yeah, I've had a rough last few weeks just with crashes, but now I feel like I'm really coming around. I really wanted to use this race as an opportunity to build for the World Championships. I actually initially wanted to come into this race as a GC contender, but just with the crash to Utah, it really set me back, and so I kind of reset my focus and now think World Championships and the Italian Classics.
So that was Mike Woods. The plan had been to launch Iran, and as you say, Fran, it perhaps wasn't so much to, you know, gain him time over everybody else, but to catch some people out, because it wasn't a climb that perhaps people would have been too nervous about. It was a pretty straightforward climb up the finish, but it was in a moment in the race where one or two people, and in fact, you know, there were a couple of splits. I mean, Emmanuel Buchmann, the first crack from him today, he lost a few seconds just by being in the wrong place in that climb.
And my favorite, Fabio Aru, he also lost a handful of seconds.
He's still going to win, though, isn't he?
Yeah, Aru, he's still winning. But
he's a clear favorite.
Exactly, but it's going to be so exciting to see he come back from the 13th place of the GC and stand atop the podium in Madrid with his second red jersey.
It's going to be amazing to witness that. Yeah, absolutely. Michael Woods, I spoke to, you know, he's recovering from his crashes. It's a shame that we're not really seeing him at his best. I think he's kind of regretting that, obviously, because he rode so well here at the Vuelta last year. I think it's a race that, if everything goes well for him, really does suit him. So it's a, you know, it's a pity that we're not seeing him at his best. But if he continues to recover, then maybe we'll see him. Well, we'll see quite a lot of him in the final week.
Yeah, this is Vuelta a España. It's a great occasion for EF Education First to reassert themselves. They've brought here a very good team, especially for the mountains. I'm sure that in this second half of the Vuelta, they are going to be a factor. And if Rigoberto Urán is at his best, which at this point we don't really know, he can well land a podium spot and maybe even win his first Grand Tour, the first Grand Tour of his career.
Who knows?
That would be huge. Botter Structure has only one Grand Tour. It's if I am,
yeah, rider,
mistaken.
Rider Hegedal,
exactly.
The Giro. Just returning to yesterday, Fran, because it was yet another Quick Step victory yesterday. 60th of the season, Elia Viviani winning at the Vuelta, with Julian Alaphilippe also winning the Tour of Britain. We didn't really talk at all about Viviani and Quick Step. I went and found Viviani this morning to speak to him about the win and about what's changed for him, because he's gone from being, you know, one of the sprinters, you know, one of many, to being really quite dominant this year. And you know, whether he's obviously a part of a great team that knows how to win and look after him, but I wondered if also he is a different athlete. Here's what he said at the start this morning. A team dedicated to work for you, as they did yesterday. Michael Morkov in particular seems to be a very good lead-out man for you.
Yeah, both these two guys. So they make the difference. So I have a good group around me. Have made the difference on all my results this year. I think I'm not stronger than last year. For sure the confidence comes with the win, but with the body and with the performance, I'm not so much stronger than last year. So the valors are almost the same. So that team around me, the feeling, the pressure to be a leader, the everything around me and how the team is with me, so that makes the difference.
That's interesting. You think that physically you're pretty much the same athlete?
Yeah, 100%. Last year I do 9 win, and it's all about have more chance. So I think the big step up I do on the road as a road rider was last year. So after the consistency last part of the season with European, with Hamburg and Plouet, it was two classics win of my dreams. So in that moment, really, I start. And I arrive at the level I want to be on the road. So, and then that team change to come here with all these good things around me, like a sprinter, helped me to do the last step up to one of the best in the world.
That was a Quickstep 60th win yesterday. Yet we hear that they're still looking for sponsorship. Does it surprise you that the most successful team in the world is struggling to get sponsorship?
Yeah, I don't know the situation. So just Patrick know that. We just ride and try to win and put this jersey in front of everyone, and then we will see. I'm sure we are in a team where they sponsor looking, because the most successful team, and we want to go to broken this record of the team win. So I think it's Patrick's job. We need just to win and give to him all the material he can to go to find a big sponsor.
You know, Rich, the impression I gather every time I see Quick Step sprinting and a Quick Step sprinter being the dominant one in a Grand Tour or in a stage race in general, is that they could have any sprinter aligned in the race and they would still win. I mean, in this case, it's Elia Viviani, who is, of course, in my opinion, the best sprinter of the season so far. But in the Tour de France, it was Gaviria. And if they had brought here Fabio Jakobsen, Alvaro Hodge, I feel that they would still be winning.
The same, yeah, it doesn't almost matter the identity of the rider. And you made the point earlier, Fran, it was Matteo Trentin last year who was a Quick Step rider and was you know, against a field that wasn't so strong in terms of sprinters, he was the dominant one. So it's maybe the team rather than the rider. And Viviani kind of said that. I also asked him about the sponsorship situation, because there was a story yesterday that Patrick Lefebvre has got a 4 to 5 million euro hole in his budget for next year. He's looking for a sponsor, and this is the reality of cycling, that you are punished for success as a team, because the better you do, the more it costs you. And so, if every year that Quickstep have a year like this, where they have lots of riders winning lots of races, the costs of running that team go up, or you lose all these riders and have to start again. And, it's a very, very difficult situation. And that's a subject that may well feature in a Kilometre Zero next week.
Do you think we could do something like that?
Thinking about it, Fran, working on these plans at the moment. But we've got one that we're working on for next week on this very subject. But yeah, fascinating. And Viviani, we think he's possibly got another chance tomorrow, don't we? Well, yeah. Tell me about tomorrow's stage.
Yeah, I mean...
Fran, tell me about today's stage, because you noticed something, or something was brought to your attention about the elevation in today's stage.
Well, the elevation game. Well, there is always this discussion in every Vuelta about how the roadbook is a bit misleading with some of the facts it has on it, and there are on it, and particularly with the elevation game data. Today it was estimated to be around 2,000 or 2,200 meters of elevation gain, whereas the reality, according to what some riders uploaded to Strava, went as far as to 3,600 meters of elevation. That's 50% more, and that makes a huge difference. What was a mid-mountain stage might be a real mountain stage altogether. And as for tomorrow, it might be a similar case, because it's a run down to the coast to finish in the Estaca de Bares, which, if I recall correctly, and if I don't, we will put it down to the 60% accuracy statement, is the northernmost point of the Iberian Peninsula, Estaca de Bares. I was speaking to Pablo Torres, local rider. He's from Coruña and rides here for Burgos BH, a modest Spanish pro continental team. And he told me that the terrain was actually quite lumpy and that there are several hills that are very steep. So that might disrupt the plans of the teams that want to force a mass sprint. In any case, the profile suggests that there won't be that much of a problem, and that we will see a showdown with Viviani, Trentin, and so on.
Well, before we go tonight, I want to just mention the shows that we've got coming up in November. If you haven't got tickets, they're selling fast. November the 12th at the Clapham Grand in South London, and November the 27th in Cardiff. Both events are on our, if you go to events on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com, you can sign up there. And as I say, tickets going pretty fast for Cardiff especially, is there aren't too many left for that one. So do get your tickets there. In London, we will be joined by Amara Terra, the Italian band. I think we'll be joined by Fran Reyes as well, won't we?
Well, it's possible, but I like to keep my options open,
People will be asking for refunds.
Yeah, I know, but I may put on my own show back in Granada.
Oh, right.
Who knows? Yeah. let's compete.
Head to head, as long as it's not in London. Anyway, that's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Fran. We've got a long drive to our hotel tonight, haven't we?
Yeah, we do, but we are going to sleep in Lugo, which is one of the most unremarkable cities in Spain, in my opinion.
The most unremarkable?
Yeah, so it's good that going to arrive late.
That's really tantalizing. And we're heading towards the coast ourselves, heading north still. Yeah. So this weather might continue with any luck.
Yeah, it's great to sleep while hearing the rain pouring.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Autumn is coming.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.